alcoholic. We're going to quickly finish. There's four questions in the basket. We decided to finish the four questions in the basket, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the future of AA.
Sandy, can you elaborate on step seven and tell some funny stories about it? Okay. How to do that quickly. This is where acknowledging that having defects removed is going to be painful and wanting to go through with it anyway. I used to use the example of boot camp in Paris Island, and the difference between asking to go through boot camp and humbly asking to go through boot camp. Regular asking would be, you've heard about it and you saw a couple movies and saw they're climbing up a rope and they're doing this, and so you ask, I'd like to go there. Humbly asking, we would allow you to watch the entire process. The whole 10 weeks, whatever it is today, every single thing that's involved, and see the tests and the suffering. And then, if you want to go through it, you're asking humbly because you understand everything that's involved and you still want to do it. That is a tribute to your understanding of your higher power, that whatever it takes, he's worth it. So that would be one story. So,
fear. Many years sober and finding more fear, not less. Your mind. If I was answering that question for myself, this is a statement. It's because I was mind bound. I'm just emerging from when the financial collapse of 2008 came. I was in a pretty dicey situation for a couple of years. And I was as fear-bound as I have been in a long, long time. I've never thought more about myself in a period of time than I did during that, which is the worst of what that is. I've slowly emerged from that. I think during major crisis, you don't have to go through, but it's almost like a process of mourning. I think if I was more spiritually advanced, I could, you know, what Sandy talked about, forgiving, you can do it immediately. Mine was a process. And I feel like I'm free of it, even though I'm not, you know, I feel like I'm free of it. And, fear is, Lee gave me a meditation book called Jesus Calling, and I really didn't want to read it because it was a little bit more churchy than I wanted, and I've been reading it, and it has been effective. One of the readings in it said that, look, I didn't design you to know ahead of time what to do. I designed you to stay in contact with me, and I will supply you what you need to know as you go. So it's like the Japanese just-in-time manufacturing process.
I want to apologize to any Japanese here today. One thing, Bob and I are very open to coming up, taking your pictures and, you know, whatever you want, but not during the meeting. You know, because we just want to make sure that we carry out AA's policy. So all the other time is free. So I just wanted to bring it up. I sat around the pool today and my mind switched to the thought that I picked up 80 or 90,000 years from my thoughts. This sounds like drop the rock. Is this a good start for being God conscious? I am not at the Harvey the Rabbit stage yet. but try to talk to God several times a day. Any tricks, I will have God in my mind more often. A decision. It all centers on a decision. You want God in your mind more often. Decide. Become a seeker. Do something different. Go get spiritual literature. Start finding one you can relate to. In other words, it is action. AA is not a mind-changing program. They were coming out the same time AA was coming out. Power positive thinking. Even Emmett Fox. The idea was change your thinking, change your whole self. That's not AA. Change your actions. And so we think that it's more powerful to change your actions. Yes, sir. Sandy, it seems like Bob is talking over your head this weekend. I was hoping that people wouldn't notice. The question really is, what weekend or series of talks do you consider your best? Chuck C. said it was the weekend that he did the new pair of glasses. Bob also can answer this.
I think there's pitching and catching. And sometimes we pitch better than we do other times. And most of the time, the impact and understanding that we have has much more to do with where we are, how receptive we are, and what we hear. So I will go to, I've listened. When I first heard John Harris, he used to open me up like a zipper. I would bring new guys over to hear him, and sometimes they weren't affected at all. So I learned that it was more where I was listening from than what the person was communicating. The other thing I like is what my mentor Bob White told me. He said, Sugar, it doesn't matter what you say. People listen to who you are.
Now, if you ask me, the one I had the most fun with was the last time I went through the 12 weeks of doing the steps, because I put in all the comedy routines that I could remember. I got the slideshow in there and all kinds of stuff. So that's one possibility. Oops, we're done. Okay, Mr. B. Set the stage for us, will you?
Okay, so I'm going to... 10 minutes?
Yeah, and we'll go back and forth.
Okay. And this is about our concerns about the future of AA?
Yeah, thoughts about the future. Yeah.
Thoughts about the future of AA. I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. As we stay on the earth longer, as our society is almost 80 years old, we start to reflect some of the experiences that happen to all societies, be they spiritual or civic. There's a tendency towards orthodoxy, which I see in Alcoholics Anonymous as a movement that is more pronounced than it has ever been. I have some opinions as to why that's happening, but the fact is I don't know. But it is something that's affected almost every organization, every church, every institution that's been around. That tendency usually does not serve that entity over a period of time, because it is, I think, ego-bound and separating. And it is, when Bob Pearson left the General Service Office, that was one of his largest concerns. There's a movement towards trying to go back to how it was. There's two or three different kind of streams. So in every institution, there seems to be schools within the institution that develop over a period of time. And we could say the Pacific group has been an influence. It's been a replication of the Fox or whatever. There seems to be a movement of people who would like us to go back and emulate more closely what went on with Akron in the first period of time because they had a higher success rate, they had a more efficient and quicker maybe way of taking people to the steps, and so forth. But a return to how things were. As I look at our fellowship today, first of all, I would say to us that we're not going to return to how things were. This is a huge battleship, and I don't think you're going to be able to turn it. It is, we are reflective of the community and the and society in which we exist. We're not treating the Second World War vets that, you know, the pre-Second World War and the Second World War, that generation is not available to us to do. We do not have the continuity and the people we're getting more complex. We're getting, you know, dual addictions. We're getting people earlier in life before they have established their patterns of life. So I think things are a little dicier. So when I look at the particulars, the two biggest differences that I see is who we're getting is one of the big differences. The other is that I think we've moved from a group-based organization or family to a meeting-based organization or family. And Tom Iveser talks about that maybe more than anybody, about going back to the home group. You know, that if we went back to the home group, we'd be a healthier organization. An organization is the wrong word, a healthier fellowship or a healthier, you know what I mean, a would be healthier. Again, I'm not sure that we're going to go back to that. The society, when we were smaller and we had the meetings, we had meetings of 20 or 30 people, and we got a new person maybe once a month or something like that, and we could pay a lot of attention to that person and kind of bring him or her into our fold and have a great influence on them. Now, there's lots of meetings that are 100 or 150 people. You're not exactly sure who's there. The meeting has its, you know, its own. I mean, there are many of those meetings I love and attend and enjoy. The closeness of that experience is not quite what, you know, the old home group was, and we don't have the continuity. And it's easier to miss someone in that process. We're not sure sometimes if the person sponsored, all those sorts of things, you know. And those meetings have high energy and, you know, so forth. My faith, so that's what I would say. I'm going to pass it to Sandy right now.
Thanks, Bob. These are, I used to know more about this than I do now. And people are very glad that I know less. Clearly, it's a different society than it was in the 40s and 50s, and even in the 60s when I came in. And by that I mean, in the 50s and 60s, almost everybody went to church, and God was just accepted as the ultimate answer to everything. But even as AA was starting, there was starting to have the transformation to where is all of the knowledge, where is the expertise, does God hold all the answers? And science started replacing God as the place to go to get answers about life. And to the extent that I would say most of the major universities, the professors are atheists. That is the in thing. That's the new religion, because their science has discovered so much about the universe that it's no longer a mystery. We don't need to go, well, God holds the answers to this, etc. So when I grew up, there wasn't any of that. So when I came to AA after an initial I don't want to hear about God. I don't want to pray. I don't, you know, the little spoiled brat stuff. I said, no, I understand. This is where the answer is, and the steps are clearly taking us in the right direction, etc. But if I was growing up today and was educated, you know, to a high degree, this would be a challenge to my fundamental ideas to be even giving lip service to a higher power. And I didn't understand that. You know, as you get old, you're not in touch with what's going on, even though you think you are. I'm going to get a cell phone someday. I have one, but I don't know how to answer it. But I do make calls on it. And the only reason I have it is I got to an airport one day, and I went to call the guy who was supposed to meet me, and there were no pay phones. So I guess it was about 5 years ago, there was a young lady who was having a terrible problem with the program. And so I had lunch with her, and she was a Harvard graduate, had an MBA, brilliant. And she said, if any of my classmates ever heard me talking about God, I'd be out of the loop. And I went, what? You got to be kidding. That's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of, you know. So we have to learn a skill in AA about communicating about the word God to accommodate these people. And you cannot, and AA's never really done that. I would like to, I have typed up something that I think could be a pamphlet on how the word God is used in AA. Or not a pamphlet or something. Where we make an attempt to explain how the word is used. Not explain what it means, explain how it's used. And the gist of that is that we have these steps. If you will keep an open mind, after all, you're scientific, you're going to conduct an experiment with an open mind. And if you will do these steps with an open mind, we believe that you will have an experience that you will not be able to explain scientifically. And when you have that experience, you then will have experienced this word that we're talking about. And it'll be very personal to you, and that's our best shot at including you in this. Would you be willing to make that experiment? Besides, it'll keep you sober and keep you alive and all of that. And so we don't attempt to come up with any definition whatsoever. The word simply is an experience. And maybe there's a way of including these people more easily so that they can relax and don't feel that somebody's jamming. I've had somebody come up to me and say, you know, it just bothers me when you talk about God all the time. And I said, I think what bothers you is you're deciding for me what I mean when I say the word, and you don't like it. It's called creating your own problem. Why don't you ask me? And then I tell them it's just an experience. And it's hard to argue against that. So that would be one area that I think we have to do a lot of work in.
They clap after you talk, and they don't clap after I talk.
I do this. You don't see me doing that. You have to learn the
I
move.
Think if you write a paper, I think what we'd call it is an encyclical. our society is so different. Our society is addictive. In the 60s, when we came in, society supported recovery. And I'm not trying to be You know, today you can sit in your bedroom with a computer and do all the sex that you want to do. You can order drugs and you can gamble on your computer. If they would have had that when I was new, whatever happened to Bobby? Well, he died in his bedroom. What did he die of? Well, he forgot to eat. It was he starved to death. It was really an unusual case of. And then through the mail, you could order credit cards. You know, it's not so much true today, but I mean, they used to just send you credit cards in the mail that you could get $5,000-$10,000 worth of credit or more, and get in a level of financial trouble that you just never. So the pattern at almost every level is addiction. We are a society of people who have a groove worn in our mental paths and our subconscious and subconscious paths towards obsessive and compulsive behaviors. My experience has been that when we come in and we stop drinking, our alcoholism tends to go underground and re-root and come up in obsessive and compulsive behaviors in other arenas of our lives, which could be eating, pornography, spending money. I mean, there's just lots of different things. And that pattern will maintain, our internal experience in that pattern will be very similar to the drinking experience that we had. We will hide, we will minimize, we will lie, we will, you know, all those sorts of patterns that came in. So it is, and it isn't getting better, it's getting worse. I mean, you look at our government, you know, I mean, wouldn't you like them to be able to do an inventory? But I mean, they're driving the bus off the cliff. I mean, there are very serious problems in education and money, balance, wars, every sorts of things, and they can't make decisions. That's true of our own lives. So I'm saying it is endemic today, and we are becoming a secular society. This, as they say, the religion of the world today is psychology. It is, you know, it is, to some extent, it is really lame to talk. I mean, when we were new, I mean, Fulton Sheen was on the, if you watched the Bishop Sheen program today, you just couldn't believe, who's that guy in the dress? What is he, you know, I mean, it is, you just wouldn't be able to understand, you know, his kind of posing and his form. I mean, it was, or Billy Graham. I mean, it is not, relevant. It's like watching a movie from the 50s, and you're saying it is, and we need grounding more than we have ever needed it before. We are what we fill ourselves full of. If you're having trouble, we are what we fill ourselves full of. We wonder why when we throw in 10 hours of television, when, you know, how did you feel when the truck ran over your husband? You know, I mean, how do you think I felt when the truck ran over my husband? I mean, it is what CNN and these programs have done is they have taken the internal dialogue and put it on loudspeaker. And it is hypnotizing. It is, whether it's the O.J. Simpson thing, whether it's the Kennedy death, whether it's the, I mean, we just take these events that would have, you know, that 40 years ago would have been a 5 or 10 minute news brief, and we spend 6 days going over it. The dialogue in our society today is to a significant extent toxic. And so to be grounded, the wind is blowing 40 miles an hour today. The need for grounding and centering and knowing where you are is greater than it has ever been. The comfort that I take is there is no other place for us to go. There is no other answer. There's an onslaught of opiate addiction today at all levels. We see relapses in our fellowship of people who, you know, innocently get an operation and they're given medications that they, you know, had no intention of abusing, but the level of toxicity of those medications take them places quicker and without thinking, and all of a sudden they find themselves adrift. And some of those people go back into a full-fledged relapse because of that. So we are dealing with issues that we didn't have those kinds of toxic medications regularly being offered. So there's an onslaught of things and problem. We have medical marijuana. We are going to have prescription situations over the next 10 years that we have not experienced before, and that's going to cause some mischief in our fellowship. So when I roll all those issues around, I get really concerned. But the fact is, my comfort is we are more needed today than we have ever been needed before. Alcoholism is still the largest problem in our society today. It is the largest drug used today. And we have an answer for that, for the majority of people. I believe that we are the God-given vehicle. I don't like those sounds because people, I think, make that sound like a religion. But I really think we've been given the ability to be able to help deal with, you know, and offer recovery to the people who have our issue. And if we stick to that, if we don't, I think the call is going to be to do what Sandy alluded to a couple of times, is to adjust our society to the disease, adjust our society to the nuances that we are experiencing in our society. And I don't want us to be old-fashioned. I do not want us to be traditionalists, but I think to be traditional and strong and stick to the essence of what our program is, and we will weather whatever is coming, and we will be a source of strength and simplicity. I mean, our message, we're not trying to convert anybody. We're not trying to ask you to shave your head and sell books at the airport. We're just trying to say, if you have the problem, we had the problem of drinking and alcoholism. Okay? We found a solution to our situation in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're open and willing and ready and want to share that solution with you. And it's an individual process. You do not have to believe anything. If you come in here and do what we did and find the results that we have, we think we can be of help to you. There's no, if we just do that, there's really nothing to argue with, because we're not trying to. And if you're not ready to do it, we weren't ready to do it until we were ready to do it also. We'll be here when you want to come back. Thank you.
Very good, Bob. I like the way Bob described how confusing everything is. And where can you go to get some peace and to get a sense that everything's all right in spite of everything that's going on? And when you look at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we notice that when you open it up, it says the story of how 100, 1,000, how thousands, we change the number, have recovered from the disease of alcoholism. And then right off the bat, we have Bill's story. And then we have a whole bunch of stories in the back. And so the way everything is explained is through stories. That's where the power is. That's why speaker meetings are so essential. Discussion meetings are great, but speaker meetings, you hear the whole story, you identify, and you feel safe. You feel like you're in the right place because you're with people who are like you. Discussion meetings are good, but you can walk out of there confused because this guy said this is the most important. He said that and this and that. And I'm a big fan of him, but we didn't go to him until we had 3 months.
Really?
Sobriety. Yeah, I didn't.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was speaker meetings. And your main job of a newcomer was listening. It's a very difficult art because I thought listening was done with your eyes. I look at your mouth, and when it stops, I'm ready to talk. And I only listen to very few people, you know, because you can tell without knowing them that's a dumb guy. Why would I listen to him? And look at her. Why would I listen to him? Oh, you're from the South? I don't listen to Southerners. Very selective. And so listening is an art. And of course, it teaches us how to listen to God when we listen to each other with a sincere desire to be part of your life. I want to know about it. And so I'm a very big fan of speaker meetings. I am more and more becoming convinced that history, I like to think of it as his story. History, the story of everything. And the story of AA, which is revealed by going through our history, will make you feel so comfortable that we're on the right path. You will just see something is guiding this, something is this. And so there is nothing that has to be changed. There's nothing that needs to be fixed. Look at all these years. The compass is pointing in the right direction. You are on the right path because you can see it. You can be part of it. And so I'm encouraging more. The more I think about studying history and making that part of AA syllabus, it's been underemphasized. I mean, probably if you're in your first 3 years, you couldn't name the three history books that AA has. And you know what I mean? They're just not talked about as much. And I think in there is a place to go that'll provide great comfort and will reunite us. What good place to get united in our own common history of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we'll feel safe in there. And we'll suddenly realize that we don't need to discuss what needs to be changed. See, that's what I find going on. And this is carrying it to the absolute extreme. I am making a joke. But I have this nightmare that there's going to come at the General Service Conference, someone's going to raise their hand and say, I think we should conduct a member survey of Alcoholics Anonymous to find out what changes to our program are necessary in this modern world, but we only want to hear from people with 2 years or less. That's my nightmare. That we start talking about what's wrong with AA. Why would we want to have a discussion like that? There's nothing wrong. Study our history, and you'll see that we've gone through wars and depressions and, you know, problems of quite a magnitude, and it'll calm us down that we're on the right path. The message is a very powerful one, and it just needs to be perfected. It needs to be passed on just the way it was written. That's just the thought. Go ahead, Bob, and he'll undermine everything I just said.
When I spoke at the International in San Diego, I told the story of the firemaker, which I lifted from Anthony DeMello. And it's a story of the man who invented fire. And he went from settlement to settlement, giving people the gift of fire. He taught them how to light their fire, to warm their caves, to cook their food, and to light the darkness. And when they went to thank the man, he was gone. He didn't want their thanks. He just wanted to give them the gift of fire. But as time went on, and people kept talking about the man who gave the gift of fire, people got jealous and upset about the man who got the gift of fire. And one time he went into a village to give them the gift of fire, and they killed him. But they knew that the people in the village would be upset by this, so they erected an altar. And at the altar, they put a picture of the man who gave them the gift of fire above the altar, and they put the tools of which the man used to make fire on the altar, and they held regular ceremonies to honor the man who gave them the gift of fire. But no one ever again made fire. There are meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that you could go in with a pill full of gasoline and a book of matches and you might not be able to start a fire. And we do not want to end up in a society that has pictures of the man who gave the gift of fire, who knows about the tools that the man had. We are people, we are fire makers. If you want to know the gift that we have, we light each other's pilot lights. When the two men came out to call on me when I called Alcoholics Anonymous, they lit my pilot light, and my life was never the same. No one else can do what we do, and I don't have, so all these questions about how many people do you sponsor, there's no good answer for that. People who are circuit speakers are often some of the most active members of Alcoholics Anonymous you'll run into. To some extent, I don't think we're models. I don't think the model is expecting you to go to 6 or 7 meetings a week. I don't think the model is expecting you to sponsor 30 or 40 or, you know. I don't think the model is to end up with more merit badges. I think the model is to return us to life. The model is to come here, get rid of our problem, start a spiritual walk, and each of us will find the level of service to which we, if we're open to it. So my recommendation, when I talk about the future of Alcoholics Anonymous, my encouragement is replace yourself. I mean, if we really want this to stay alive, replace yourself. Find another person, just another one. You know, it'd be nice, and if we're going to be here a fairly long period of time, you might find one or two or three of those people. Some of you, if you open yourself up to what level of service you're going to be, you'll find more, you'll do something. But I think most of us throughout our lifetime, if we would just listen and look to what's going on, we're going to notice someone who needs some attention. We're going to notice someone who's new. And we're always a little scared, we're always a little awkward, we're not sure if we can bring someone through the steps. People have been stumbling through this process a long time, and you're not going to hurt a new person by showing them attention and interest and taking care of them. And that would be the thing that I sometimes look at the events that I go talk to, and the people in the audience are aging. You know, we don't get as many younger people as I wish that we would have at events. So the two things that I would say that we could do in our society is bring someone. Include, you know, I don't do that well because I'm busy and I got a whole conversation about that. But bring someone included and replace yourself. You know, if we, over the next 2 years, replaced ourselves, we'd double the population of Alcoholics Anonymous. We would the wonder and why, when Sandy talks about, Sandy has influenced me. In our area, the discussion meeting dominates. 90% of the meetings we have are closed-up discussion meetings. But the story, I mean, it is, you know, that is where I'm beginning to really get that is, you know, what is going on and the influence. But think of that, what we could do if we would, you know, take that as our mission and be open to that. And if we don't do that, if we don't replace ourselves, we're giving up. We're honoring the people who made fire, but we're no longer keeping alive what is the gift that we have been given. And I think to some extent then it becomes conceptual and it diminishes.
Thanks, Bob. I reflect on something like this, that suppose that through psychological and scientific means, it became possible to convey sobriety to alcoholics so that they could get sober without God. And when you came to AA, you could choose which path you wanted to take. The God path or the not God. And let's say half went this way and half went that way. And they all ended up sober. But 50% of the people who chose the not God path, had they chosen the God path, would have had a spiritual awakening. Now, I don't know why, but I see that as the saddest thing in the world. I just go, oh my God, you would deliberately cheat someone out of the possibility of a spiritual awakening where they would get in touch with their own creator? Yeah, but we like doing things on our own. And so there's the internal debate that I have, is that this spiritual world has to be kept open. And Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the few places where it can be kept open. Why? Because everybody who comes here is desperate. We have more miracles in AA than anywhere else because we corner the market on desperate people. And desperate people, the ego is open to being crushed. It's open to letting somebody else run our lives, at least temporarily. So I just feel it's so essential to preserve AA's role as a spiritual path and just to keep it the way it's been. Now, I'm going to mention historians again because this fellow, Ernie, he studied AA as a historian for a lot of years. A lot of years. And the not God went up to Bill's death, and then the AA, the story goes up to 1988. And people asked him, as a historian, what do you think is going to happen to AA? How do you see it turning out? And of course he said, well, any organization, AA can't be destroyed from without. The people can pick on us, they can give us all the negative publicity in the world, and it won't hurt us a bit. It'll have to happen from within. And from within, there's only two extremes, extreme right and extreme left. One comes up with a dogma that says, if you're not doing it the way I'm doing it, you're doing it wrong. That's what Bob was talking about, the rigidity. But the other extreme is, you can do it any way you want. And anything goes. Let's just try this. Let's just try that. Let's be open. They both have the potential to take us apart and take us down. The rigidity one is easier to see, and the anything goes one is harder. And that's why it's, in my opinion, more dangerous, because it's much more subtle. It is much more subtle. You know, let's get rid of the Lord's Prayer. Let's not talk about God so much. And when we go, well, why don't we be nice to that person? It's obviously upsetting them. So this can go on. But I want to read what he ended with, because it gave me a lot of hope, the last paragraph. I got to take my glasses off to read. He said, Alcoholics Anonymous shall survive as long as this message remains that of not godness, in other words, you're not God, of the wholeness of accepted limitation, and this itself shall endure so long as AA's spiritualizers and its liberals, its right and left, maintain their mutual respect, the creative tension that arises from their willingness to participate, even with others of so different assumptions, in the shared honesty of mutual vulnerability, openly acknowledged. Alcoholics Anonymous will live, in other words, as long as it's Alcoholics Anonymous, an utter simplicity which encases a complete mystery that no one claims to perfectly understand. And then he comes over at the very, very end.
Is Kurt saying that or Wilson?
No, Wilson said the...
Okay, but are you quoting Wilson when you do that?
Okay. Yeah. That AA is a utter simplicity, which in cases, it's in quotes. He said the deeper answer is that alcoholics, once they've tasted sobriety, become addicted to it, and therefore to Alcoholics Anonymous, to the way of life encapsulated in the 12 steps and protected by the 12 traditions and extended through the 12 concepts. It's conceivable, I suppose, because all institutions degenerate, that individuals who call themselves Alcoholics Anonymous might someday ignore service, violate traditions, and scorn the steps, or worse, accord them only lip service. But should that happen, I am sure that somewhere, perhaps under a battered bridge or in a dingy alcove, perhaps even in an atmosphere free of cigarette smoke and lacking coffee, some alcoholic who's trying to stay sober will sidle up to some other alcoholic who may be drinking and say, "Psst, buddy, you must be awfully thirsty, but let me tell you how it was with me when I used to need a drink." And in that moment, AA will begin, and the story of Alcoholics Anonymous will continue. I think that's a beautiful thought, that nothing will ever destroy the carrying the message. It's a happy thought. Thank you.
Are we done?
Okay, we need Dick to come up and say goodbye to everybody. So I know this is sad, but he can do it.
The hardest part is getting there.
Dick, we're so appreciative that you came and spent time. I know you're not feeling good.
I feel so emotional.
When I get in a group like like this, and always think about where I came from and where I am today, oh my God. And the thing I think is it's available to anybody, you know. I mean, if a guy can do like I did and still stay sober, anybody can. This is such a special weekend. I'm so happy to be a part of it. And I just can't thank these guys enough. I've been with them a couple of times, and they asked me, here's the deal. I'm not going to stay up here for more than a half hour. A couple of weeks ago, in fact, a week ago last Friday, I went up to Newport Richey. They asked me to come up and speak. And I think I told you that's a place where I said, one of my sponsees came up here, I think, and spoke a couple of weeks ago. Sandy something. Sandy. They were impressed. So the guy says, you act awfully excited about being up here to speak. I said, well, I am. I'm overwhelmed. He said, well, why? I said, this is the first place that's had me speak once that ever asked me to come back. When I chaired the roundup a few years ago, they came up with they had a quick board meeting after the second time I was the voice there. And they adopted a new rule, a person can only be the voice 2 years. The guy that came after me was there four. But anyhow, I just want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank everyone for their support, for Dr. Bob's house. It's It's very important that we preserve our history. And as long as we got guys like this around, and all Lee and all of his people, and Lord willing, we'll do it again. Thank you all.
Yeah. Lord's prayer. Lord's prayer.
I one slight omission here. We're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Works if you work.